Hello and welcome to Deprogram with Kerry Smith. Today's episode is an interview with someone I've been lucky enough to meet a few times on the internet. His name is Josiah Rises. He has a hard-hitting YouTube channel that's dedicated to commentary on the culture with a strong emphasis on the mockery of woke Hollywood, which I appreciate. He's also the founder of Epicverse, an entertainment company that is focused on good storytelling, community, and being as awesome as possible. Welcome, Josiah.
Hey, what's up, Kerry?
Hey.
How's it going? Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so glad you could, you know, give me your time today. I love your bio.
Oh, thanks.
I like, especially the end, being as awesome as possible.
Hey, you know, that's a really important part about, you know, creating good stories these days. I feel like, I don't know, for me, especially with the type of stories that we're telling, which are more like fantasy, sci-fi types of films and shows and things like that. You know, there's, I feel like the awesome factor is missing in a lot of fantasy these days. So, you know, just like sitting down and be like, okay, what can we do with this story, with these characters that is just awesome, you know? And that's just something that we always are asking ourselves, what can we do that would make this just way cooler? Actually, I learned that from Brandon Sanderson, the author of the Mistborn series and stuff. That was something that he continued to say in this class that I took of his and stuff, where he basically just something that he's always asking himself when he is writing his fantasy novels is, okay, what can I do here that would just make this awesome? And I was like, you know what? That's a great way to look at things. So,
so you took writing classes then, is that right?
I've taken all sorts of writing classes. The first thing that I ever did was, there was like this, it was, Children's Literary Institute thing that I did, where it was like this class where I actually got to have like a one-on-one mentorship with a successful author, and she was great, she was awesome, but we would basically communicate, and she was kind of my instructor. She kind of taught me the ins and outs of how to write a good story, and for that it was mostly focused on like children's stories, but you know, that obviously pertains to pretty much any aspect of writing in a lot of ways. So she was awesome, she was great. I haven't talked to her in years, I should reach out to her, but you know, I've done that, I've done like a few different like filmmakers academy type of things and all sorts of stuff. So yeah,
well, let's back up a little bit, because you have a very popular channel on YouTube called Josiah Rises, and that's where you do more of the commentary on woke Hollywood. And from what I understand, that's not your first channel. Didn't you have a rebirth?
It's kind of a crazy story. So I first became interested in YouTube back in like 2010 2011, inspired by some YouTubers back in those days who were really big, like Niga Higa and Julian Smith and some of these guys who were making, you know, more like skits type of content for YouTube. And at that point, you know, that was kind of like a pretty new thing. And, you know, that was like huge. So I was really inspired by that. So me and my brother, we actually made a lot of like skit type of content. We made all sorts of crazy videos about, some of them are so stupid. It's like,
I know any of them.
What's that?
Would I know any of them?
Probably not. One of the ones that we did was this one where we did this like weird story of this guy who found like a Roman spear buried in his backyard, and he named it Brittany the Spear, and he used it to cut cheese in his kitchen. And it was just like this really stupid video where we bought like all these different types of cheese blocks, and he would like cut them, and it was just really dumb. So I made that channel back in like 2010, and I ran that for a few years, but then I kind of then shifted my focus to filmmaking solely. And after I made a feature film and everything else with that, which, you know, we can get into that as well. But the feature film didn't really go as I was hoping it would. And there's a lot of intricacies into why that was. But I decided I was going to then put filmmaking on hold for a while and start my own YouTube channel. where I would try to build an audience of people that were interested in me and what I wanted to do, which ultimately was filmmaking. Like I never lost that passion for filmmaking, but I wanted to do things differently than what they've been done in the past with, you know, a lot of other, you know, filmmakers and stuff. I wanted to actually build an audience of people that would basically be my own community of people that would be interested in what I was creating, which is why I started Josiah Rises. Josiah Rises as a channel, I've pretty much always been kind of doing the same type of content, talking about things that are happening in Hollywood, stupid things that people put in movies, woke nonsense, all of that type of stuff. And in towards the end of 2020, with the elections and everything else, I started to also talk about politics on my channel as well. And, you know, just because that was something that I was very passionate about at that time. So I was like, well, you know, it's something that I'm very interested in. So I'm going to talk about it on my channel.
It all relates.
Exactly. Exactly. And people loved it. People were just like, it actually like made my channel blow up even more than ever because of me talking about some of the political stuff that was going on. So, and then my channel got demonetized, 9 days after the election in 2020. So after that just completely just spiraled everything out of control for me. Emotionally, mentally, everything. And I kind of became lost in a lot of ways. And so the whole year of 2021 was honestly a pretty tough year for me. Towards the end of 2021, my channel actually got remonetized because of my fans just being so supportive and continuing to try to push my channel to get remonetized. It was amazing. I owe a lot to a lot of fans who honestly continued to push even when I kind of gave up and moved on and I started a full-time job, basically being like a house inspector, and some of that type of stuff, an appraiser. And so I kind of moved on from my YouTube channel and I was like, well, you know, I don't know what the future holds, but you know, I'm going to take this as a sign that maybe it's time for me to move on into something else. And my fans just kept on pushing for me. And I owed it to a lot of people like Master of the TDS and some of those other guys who continued to push and they got my channel remonetized, which is pretty amazing.
Okay, this is what I was thinking of. So I thought you got banned and you started again, but it was that you were demonetized and you took like a year away and then came back like a phoenix from the ashes.
Right. So I kept on making content for a while after I got demonetized, but then we were in the process of moving. So then I didn't have any internet. So that kind of became a big meme in the Geeks and Gamers community because I literally had no internet whatsoever because of this place that I moved to. And honestly, like they were putting in fiber internet, but it took them forever to actually get it to our house for whatever reason, which was super frustrating in many ways. I would literally like call them every day and be like, okay, when are you guys going to put in the internet? And they're like, oh, well, I don't know. Let's see where they're at. Oh, they're right down the road from you. The people right next door to you actually have internet. And I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Where's my internet? So it just turned into this big thing with that. And it just took them forever to actually get us internet. But when I finally did, then I started to get back into everything. So it was actually a very needed break. It gave me a chance to just to kind of step back from the internet in general.
Yes.
Which was a really, really good thing actually for me. So I don't regret it at all. It helped me kind of realign a lot of the stuff that I wanted to do, things that I thought were important. It allowed me to kind of put a new refocus on things like my family and God and everything else. And so it was good in the long run. And honestly, from a lot of that, that's where Epicverse was born from as well. So it turned into a good thing. And I definitely don't have any regrets for any of that.
I love that. That makes so much sense to me because I've had my own experiences with going through something that's a trial at the time and not really, you know, because we're human, not being able to see beyond that to what's next. And you mentioned God. Yeah. I am a believer. I have many atheists who watch my channel and tolerate me talking about this. So they're probably like, here she goes. But I'll just say that what I'm coming to learn in kind of late, maybe other people learned this earlier, is that those trials, sometimes they're necessary. They're necessary because you're either being strengthened, like disciplined, or there's something on the other side that you can't quite see yet, where I always end up looking back and saying, yes, that was awful. It was awful, but I'm glad it happened. Isn't that a weird thing? I hated it. I wish it didn't happen, but also glad it happened. Like, yeah, you know, something blessing in disguise.
Exactly. I mean, something that I've had to learn in a lot of ways, the hard ways, because I am a very stubborn person. And usually I have to learn things. Usually I have to do the stupid thing in order to learn my lesson. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, yeah. That's just the way that I operate. Like, you know, there's the smart people that see the mistakes that other people make. They're like, okay, I'm not going to do that.
Exactly.
I'm the guy that actually has to make the mistake. So
same. I have to learn. I have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I've had to learn so many times that, you know, we always see is just like a very small little window into the big picture of everything that God is orchestrating and everything else. And, you know, it's very easy when you have just that small window to get stressed out about everything that's going on, because, you know, you have a very small perspective about life and about everything that's happening in your life and everything else. But God already sees the big picture. He already Yes. knows exactly what's going on. And then usually when you get through on the other side, you get to see a little bit more of the bigger window, and Mm-hmm. you're like, oh, that's why that happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's why I've Yeah. started. I realized, hey, maybe because I don't have that big picture, I don't know what's best for me. Mm-hmm. Like, there might be something that's much better than the thing I want at the moment that I can't see. I don't Exactly. have that big picture. So let me back up one more time. See, when you started Josiah Rises, the channel, and you started critiquing woke and stuff that's going on in culture, why was that important to you? I talked to a lot of people who, I'm someone who, I was in the woke world for 2 decades. Mm-hmm. And I came out of it. And I know many others who've come out of it. And then I also have some people watch my show who were never in it, who could see what it was from the beginning. Are you someone who was always kind of awake in that way, where you could see what was wrong with what we call woke or social justice? Or was it a slow kind of awakening?
Yeah, I've always been awake. I would say that I was more tolerant of some of the stuff that they were putting in the films originally, just because I was like, I don't know. I just kind of thought of it as just like weird, like, I don't know, phase or something like that, mm-hmm. they were doing, and it would just be over soon. And I didn't really think of it as being a big deal. But then as I started to actually pay attention to what was going on and think, okay, there has to be some reason why a lot of this stuff is happening. And it's, you know, obviously, you know, there's always the aspect that people bring up of, oh, well, they're just trying to pander to a certain group of people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a lot deeper than that in a Yes. lot of ways. And that's when I started to, you know, research things and hear things like, Yuri Bezmenov's interview and some of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this like literally is something that could be so applicable to what's happening today. And then I started to actually like realize what's happening right now is the culture war. You know, this is important stuff. And so I just started to actually pay more attention and get more involved in that. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I personally just think that the woke stuff is more serious than what people give it credit for.
Yeah.
And I think that
I agree.
It's a lot more destructive to society than what people are giving it credit for. And that's honestly just what is important to me, because I love this country. I love the people in this country. And it's just tragic to me to continue to see our country crumble and fall apart because of a lot of these ideologies that are affecting it. So
yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It's yeah. It's fun to mock it, and I actually think mocking it and having a sense of humor about it is one of the best weapons against it.
Yes.
But it is something very serious. It's yeah. just that you can't mm-hmm. lose that sense of humor about it. You can't let it turn you into someone that's so serious all the time. You have no ability to laugh at it, you know, mm-hmm. but I agree with you. So then did you, when you started moving from criticizing woke entertainment to talking a little bit more about politics, why were you spurred on to talk about politics, and how are those two things connected in your mind?
I mean, honestly, it just comes down to the culture and the country. And, you know, there's always that phrase, politics is downstream of culture, which, you know, I do believe is a thing. So, you know, it was just like, it was something that was happening at that time. I was talking about a lot of the political stuff that happened in 2020, like the riots, you know, and all of those different things that were going on, COVID, all that type of stuff. So I was talking about kind of the big, you know, everything that was going on, because that was just such a crazy year. And I was just really much in tune with a lot of that stuff that was going on. And, you know, it worked for my channel, because it is kind of in the same vein as a lot of the other cultural type of stuff as well that we talk about a lot, mm-hmm. you know, things that are coming from Hollywood and all of this type of stuff. And it's all interconnected. And I think that it's important to talk about, you know, everything that's kind of happening in the culture, whether it's politics or culture or whatever else. So, and honestly, you know, as much as politics is downstream of culture, culture is downstream of worship, and I just find that to be a very interesting thing, because everyone has something that they worship, whether you admit it or not, you know what I mean? And so, you know, when it comes to our country right now, there's the worship of self, which is a huge thing, and that we can see that everywhere in all sorts yes. of different issues. But there's also this thing, and the government loves this, especially the worship of government. Yep. And that is a major, major problem as well, which we are continuing to unfortunately reap what we are sowing because of that. And I just think that a lot of these things are huge issues. And especially as we see this happen to so many other cultures across the world and things like that, communist countries and everything else, and what happened with all of those. You know, communism is one of the biggest destroyers of human life that has ever existed. And I just don't want to see that type of stuff happen here. So,
dude, I was so meant to talk to you today. that just piqued my interest immediately, because I find myself I'll get kind of a train of thought. I'll be stuck on something for a while until I think I've figured it out, or my thoughts on it are. Yeah. And I've been doing shows lately where I was on You Are Here with Elijah and Sydney, and somehow I ended up asking them, it wasn't even the topic, but I was like, do you think we're built to worship? Cause I can't stop thinking about this. Yeah. And I want to send you this sermon my pastor did, cause he's the one that got me thinking about this. He was sort of saying, how do you define man, human, how are we different from animals, or are we different from animals? And you know, philosophers throughout history have sort of tried to tackle that question with, like, I think, therefore I am. Like, is it man's yeah. ability to reason that sets us apart? Or is it man's ability to have emotion? Or my pastor said, is it that we're designed to worship? Is man a creature that's designed to worship? And so the more I thought about that, I'm like, is that maybe the root cause here with all of this? When culture goes wrong, is it because people maybe are just worshiping the wrong things? Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah. I mean, look at humanity since the beginning. We've always had something that we're worshiping, and you know, whether it's, you know, you know, the gods of Egypt, or it's, you know, everything that's that comes out of Hinduism or whatever else, like, there's always something that people worship. And in this day and age, you know, it can look different than what it has in yeah. the past, you know, but people are still finding things that they are holding on to, that they're glorifying. Man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And when you replace the glorification of God with something else, you're still worshiping something else, you know. Like, I do think that it's an innate part of being human, that we have to direct our glory to something, and
preferably something bigger than ourselves. That's not yeah. the state,
right? ourselves,
or substances, yeah. or, you know, any mm-hmm. number of things. Consumerism. Wow.
Yes. Yes.
I love that you're just so forthright about what you think about things, and not you don't seem to be afraid of anybody putting you in some weirdo Christian box, do they?
No, I mean, I'm sure that there are people that, I mean, you know, there's this whole debate that I got, Shadiversity, he did this video recently about, like, dinosaurs, and, you know, if armor would have been effective towards dinosaurs, and if, you know, all that type of stuff. I just found it to be very fascinating because, you know, being that I believe in creation and everything else, I don't believe in, you know, the world being billions and billions of years old and all this type of stuff. And there's literal proof around the world that humans were around during dinosaurs. I mean, there's like, I don't know if you ever heard of like the Ica stones or anything like that, but there's literally these stones that are in South America that are, you know, thousands of years old that have these carvings of humans with dinosaurs on them. And so, you know, how would that have gotten there if people didn't know what dinosaurs looked like? So all that type of stuff is just so fascinating. And so I brought some of that type of stuff up when Chad made that video, and people were like, you know, humans and dinosaurs have never existed together at the same time and all of this crazy stuff. And people were like, you're just a stupid Christian and all of this stuff. And so, yeah, I mean,
you know what,
eventually, but you know,
I was a biological anthropology and anatomy major. Mm-hmm. And when I started leaving social justice a few years ago, I realized how many received opinions I have. Anyway, long story short, it's taking me a while to go through kind of each issue that I'm interested in and figure out what my opinion is on it. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to do that. And so there's lots of things I'm just kind of like, I don't know, I haven't done the research. And this is one of those things that I feel silly for saying, but since you're talking about it, I'll just say it. The past 2 years, the COVID years, mm-hmm. and watching how they turned everything upside down and convinced us of things that I don't believe are true. And I've now started to question the climate crisis, and I've also started to question some of the stuff I learned in my anthropology classes about evolution. And I know, yeah. And I just haven't had time to go and look at it with. I've always completely rejected anything that was like skeptical of it, so I haven't even read. You know, with the eco stones, I don't even know about that. So yeah, that's on my list at some point.
That is some of the stuff that fascinates me the most. It's one of my favorite things to just look up and read about and to study, is just like, what was the world actually like thousands and thousands of years ago? And so there's all these just really fascinating things out there that are just like little glimpses at it. And I honestly don't even think that I have all the answers for a lot of that stuff either.
Of course, yeah.
But you know, when you see some of these things out there that are, you know, like literally how would people know what dinosaurs looked like thousands of years ago if they weren't actually seeing them there, you know? So it's just fascinating stuff to me.
When you were younger, were you drawn to filmmaking, like movies, fantasy, stuff like that at an early age? Did you always know you wanted to be a creator?
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Like when I was like a really young kid, my parents were reading me, like, you know, The Odyssey, The Iliad, Beowulf, Epic of Gilgamesh, all of these stories, and I was just so fascinated by all of them. And Narnia was huge in my life. And then when the Lord of the Rings films came out, that was really the thing that just changed my life completely, and honestly just made me just appreciate filmmaking so much. Like that's what made me realize that I wanted to be a filmmaker. So you know, when the movies came out, it's funny because when Fellowship came out, at that point, my parents, they were like, oh, this movie's gonna be way too scary for you, we're not gonna take you to go see it, but here, you can stay home and watch the cartoon version of it while we go see the live action version. And and you know, I remember just going to like Walmart before the movie came out and seeing like all the action figures, you know, the cave troll with his spear and the chain around his neck and all of this stuff. And my imagination was just going wild because I didn't know the story behind those types of things at that point, but I was like, wow, like these look so cool and I want to know what's going on in this film. My parents were like, no, that's too scary for you. So they're like, we'll get you a babysitter. You can stay home and watch the cartoon and we're going to go watch the real movie. So when they got back and stuff, my mom was freaked out. She was totally terrified of Fellowship of the Ring. She thought that orcs were going to jump through the windows and kill us all and stuff. So, but that just made me go like, oh, I want to see this movie even more now. So then when it came out in VHS, I remember all this so vividly. My dad and I, we actually went on like this salmon fishing trip on Lake Michigan. And afterwards we stopped by Walmart for some reason. He had to pick up something or something like that. And I remember seeing the VHS of Fellowship of the Ring there. And I was like, oh my gosh, dad, can we please get Fellowship of the Ring? Watch, please. And I somehow managed to convince him to get it. So, the next day was Sunday. Right after church, we got home and we watched Fellowship of the Ring, and I was just like mind blown. I remember when I was so just in love with everything that was happening on the screen. Yeah. And then, you know, I started to watch like the behind the scenes stuff and see how they made the movie, and it just like spiraled into this huge thing where I was like, oh my gosh, I love movie making. I love storytelling in this way. I love film and all of that type of stuff. I love fantasy. This is what I want to do with my life. And that was a huge, huge moment that completely changed my life forever. So
that's amazing.
So yeah. Yeah.
So you started after the break that you told us about, you came back and you started Epicverse, and I see the logo behind you. And I think this is so inspiring. Tell us a little bit about Epicverse, about what you're trying to do with it, because it's different from your commentary.
Yes, it's going to be very different from all of that. And honestly, that's something that I'm really excited about. So basically with Epicverse, you know, we're all tired of Hollywood's, you know, agendas and everything else, which is why basically we created our entertainment company Epicverse and everything else, because, you know, we want to focus on telling awesome stories and building community. And, you know, the thing that with Epicverse that we're really looking at ways how to be different than Hollywood while still elevating our storytelling abilities more than Hollywood. So, you know, we're looking at things like embracing the times. We're looking at things like, you know, using social media more, interacting with our fan base more, building our community and really listening to what our community has to say and their feedback on different things that we are creating. It's going to be pretty heavily fantasy based in a lot of the stuff that we're doing, at least for the moment, because that is what my community wants. Like every time I do a poll asking my community, what do they want to see? Would they rather see an original superhero show, or would they rather see an original fantasy show? It was like 85% of people said fantasy. Like it was just overwhelming. Like everybody, that's what they want. Mm-hmm. So that honestly made a huge impact on some of the stuff that we are doing with Epicverse as well. We haven't said a whole lot yet about what we are exactly doing with Epicverse. We haven't really, you know, we haven't shared any details about the projects that we're doing or anything like that. But what I can say is that I am very, very excited for what we are creating. And I just want people to understand that we are totally focused on telling the best stories that we can with the films that we are creating, with the shows that we are creating. Yes, we are creating films and shows. There's going to be some other surprises in there as well, but yeah. So
what I was going to ask you, I didn't know if I could say that you're working on a film. Can I say that? Mm-hmm. Or you just finished a film?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. That's pretty cool. Yes. And so you're doing that. What's interesting about that to me is you're the first person I've talked to who's working in that medium for alternative creations outside of the system, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure everybody who's watching this is familiar with Eric July, who just launched Ripaverse, which is incredible.
Incredible.
$3 million, you know?
Yeah.
Independent comic books.
Amazing. Love it. It's just like, the thing I love so much about that is that is going to be a catalyst for the culture in a lot of ways. I think people are going to look at that. People who are creators who maybe have never really thought that they could actually get anywhere. And they're going to look at that. They're going to be like, this is possible. And they're going to then continue to pursue what they want to do in whatever medium that is of creativity. And I think that's going to be a huge encouragement for the cultural change that we need.
So one thing I've always wondered is, because depending on the medium, I'm not saying it's easy to do an independent comic book. I'm sure it's incredibly difficult, but comic books and music, I think, are a bit easier to do than some massive production of film, like Lord of the Rings style, you know, fantasy, a film or a TV show. And for some people, that's always been kind of a barrier when it comes to the imagination of what can you do outside the system, right? So what would you say are the biggest challenges for doing like the film that you just did?
Yeah. Honestly, you know, money is a huge challenge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I will say, I mean,
yeah, budget
for the time right now, all the money's coming out of my own pocket, but I am very, very blessed to have my Josiah Rises channel, which, you know, I make very, very good money on that. And I'm able to support a lot of the stuff that we're doing with Epicverse. So, you know, as far as that goes, you know, it's not a hindrance at the time being, but it would be nice to get to a point where, you know, I'm not the only one that's having to put money into things to make stuff. That will be nice. So that's kind of what we're actually doing. We are working on right now on building an Epicverse website. And with that website, it's going to be, have you ever heard of Rooster Teeth?
Yes. They're based in Texas, or they were. Yeah.
So I've always been fascinated by what they've done. And I think that they've kind of gone off the rails over the past few years, and they aren't as big as they were, you know, a while ago. But some of their shows, like that, like Ruby and some of these other things that they've done, have been super inspirational to me. And I just look at what they've done, and I'm like, I kind of want to do something like that, but without all of the extra woke baggage that Rooster Teeth continues to kind of pile on themselves in a lot of ways. And so I just want to focus on telling good stories, like what they were doing in the early days of Ruby and some of that type of stuff. Like they were just focused on telling a really good story. And they did, like the first three, I don't remember, volumes, I think is what they called their seasons of Ruby, were just phenomenal. And then after that, they started to, you know, get into a lot of the woke stuff. And you can see that the story suffered because of that, unfortunately. So that's kind of what we're doing with Epicverse. We're kind of creating a streaming platform that is also community-based, like Rooster Teeth was. But we are going to be, it's going to be very simple in design. It's going to be, you know, when you get on the homepage, you're going to see our films there, our shows, everything else. You're going to be able to just click on what you want to watch. And we're also going to allow you to be able to give us feedback and what you are enjoying, what you hate, what you want to see change.
You mean you're not going to shut down comments?
No, I know. It's crazy. You know, we're actually open to what people have to say, which is kind of an insane thing for people to grasp these days. But yeah, so I'm really excited for the website. I think the website is going to be awesome. And, you know, that's obviously a huge way for people to be able to support us, so we can continue to build on what we're doing here and everything else. So, yeah. Cool. Yeah. So, like we have some different shows that we're doing obviously as well, but, I will say that for now we are working on a major, major fantasy type of show that we are going to, we may or may not be releasing a pilot episode for when we launch Epicverse. And, it's going to be interesting to see what the community thinks about that. So super excited for that.
This is just, it's all exciting and you're blowing my mind. I'm so happy you're doing this.
And I will say the fantasy show that we're making is unlike anything else you've ever seen in fantasy before. It's going to be completely new, fresh, and it's going to be really, really awesome. And it's going to be focused on all the right things: good storytelling, good character development, and timeless messages. That's something that we're really focused on on Epicverse, timeless messages, because right now Hollywood is so obsessed with relevant things right now, right here, you know, these hot button topics. That's what they're continuing to try to push in their films. And because of that, their films are going to suffer. Like they're not going to be relevant in 50 years from now, or or even 20 years from now. That's one of the things that separates what Hollywood is doing right now, and honestly what a lot of authors are doing these days, I would say, as opposed to like what Tolkien did when he wrote Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings has timeless messages, universal messages that anyone across the world can pick up the book and relate to. That is what we're going to be focused on with Epicverse.
That whenever you're so right about timeless messages in entertainment or in creativity and writing and music versus this ideological kind of message, like, which is not timeless. And it sort of reminds me of when you watch old propaganda films now, like if you go back and watch, you know, marijuana is, you know, like a movie like Reefer Madness, where it's sort of, it's a product of the time it was in, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, this is kind of funny as a cult thing now, because you look back and you're like, wow, this is obvious propaganda. Hopefully people in the future will look back at all this woke stuff and be like, oh my God.
Right. And I honestly, I think they will. So, obviously we can't really say what the future is going to hold, but I do think that, I don't think that this stuff is going to last forever. I think we're already seeing some sort of shift against it in a lot of ways. That's honestly really exciting to see. Now obviously there's a lot of other things, a lot of other hurdles that we have ahead of us as well. I think that the over worship of government is a major issue for our country, and so, you know, we'll see what continues to happen in the future. But as far as the woke stuff, I think more and more people are definitely becoming churned off to it.
So. Yeah. Well, that kind of leads into sort of a big picture question I was going to ask you, is sort of, where do you see things headed, and do you have a positive outlook? Or
I think overall I'm a pretty like positive person. I look at the world as always in a state of redemption in a lot of ways, and I think that people are going to continue to build a better future for the world. I definitely don't have some sort of doomsday type of look on humanity or anything else, but sometimes, you know, in that big picture of the gradual upward slope of humanity getting better, the world getting better and everything else, obviously there's going to be some dips and stuff. And I think that we are kind of in a dip right now, at least when it comes to America. Obviously, when you look at the big picture of the world, there's other countries that are continuing to do very well and continue to grow and everything else, which is awesome to see. But as far as like just focused on America right now, I think that we are definitely in some sort of dip right now. And I don't really know how long that dip is going to last. Yeah. I hope it doesn't last forever. But it's going to be interesting, especially, you know, seeing that this is another election year, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of happens with all of that as well. So,
yeah. So I take positions on this. I'm certainly not a neutral interviewer. I think you have a great head on your shoulders. Can you tell us, as a leading question, why do you have such a good head on your shoulders? Can you identify something? And sometimes I ask people like, how is it that you're awake, or you could see through this kind of bad ideology? And people have different answers. Like, well, I have family members who escaped communism, or I have, you know, this character trait. Like, what is it about you that gives you that, I think, very good perspective?
That's a really good question. Honestly, I think that a lot of it had to do probably with family upbringing probably was
that's
a big
what
thing.
I was going to think. I was thinking that about you. You have good parents.
Yes. Excellent parents. They've always been really, really awesome to me. And I love them. Like, they're very solid. Like, I don't think I've ever told anyone this before. So this is kind of like exclusive for your interview here. I actually have, 7 brothers and sisters. I'm the oldest of them. So we've always been a pretty big family, but we all love each other. We all have each other's backs, and we, you know, we're a very, very strong family, and we all have good heads on our shoulders.
That's an amazing testament, like, to have 8 kids and they're all like pretty like good kids. Your parents did right.
Yeah. I mean, my dad was never absent. There were years where, especially after, you know, we kind of lost everything during this period in our life, back in like 2004, which was a really, really tough year for our family. It was very tough for my dad because he had to work like you know, like a gazillion jobs to provide for us and get us kind of back on our feet. So that was tough, but my dad was always there. He was always part of the family. He was always, you know, leading and you know, helping guide and everything else, and being there supportive of my mom as well, and she vice versa. So it was always obviously there was tough times, but overall it was always great. It was always awesome. So cool. So obviously, you know, that was a huge part of it. Honestly, just my anchored worldview in the Bible is probably something that has helped me as well, just to be able to kind of cut through a lot of the nonsense that's out there. So so I would definitely give those things as probably my biggest credits for why I am the way that I am, and the way
why you are the way you are. Yeah. And then I, you know, again, kind of a big, although this isn't a big picture question, this is just more of a, sometimes I like to end on something that, like, a feel-good question, because we have so much negative stuff that we're reading every day and that's being pumped out on social media. And a lot of times we're talking about the negative stuff that's being pushed on us. So what are some things that you're excited about and that give you joy?
Okay. So I am a huge foodie. I love food.
Okay. I'm with you. Tell me about this food.
Yeah. So, I don't know, like, there's not really anything that I'm looking forward to per se with that, but I am actually starting a food YouTube channel soon as well.
What?
where I'm going to be just trying all sorts of new food that's coming out and everything else, and cooking food. And I love to cook as well. Like, cooking is actually like one of my favorite things to do.
Right on.
Super therapeutic for me. And sometimes just at the end of the day of just, you know, screaming about Hollywood all day, you know, it feels good to be able to just sit there and cook some good steaks and make some food.
Simple pleasures, man.
yeah, exactly. So I love to make good food, and honestly, I just love to make good food for other people as well. Like, I love to cook for other people. When we were in Florida for the Orlando meetup with Geeks and Gamers, one of the nights, we, you know, pretty much up until that point, that one night, we've been eating like fast food every night and all of this stuff. And I was just kind of getting sick and tired of it. Like, I want to make like some actual food here. So I was like, hey, how would I cook dinner tonight? And so I bought like a bunch of like prime rib steaks and, just made all sorts of like amazing, amazing food for everyone there, grilled it all. And, we did like asparagus and garlic bread and a couple different salads and everything else. And people really enjoyed the food there, and it made me really happy.
That's so, the best thing about cooking for other people is the enjoyment. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So food is a huge thing for me, and it always makes me happy. So my other thing is video games. Like, video games is a great way for me just to kind of break away from the world and just kind of, you know, it's very therapeutic for me as well. So, I mean, there's a couple games that I'm looking forward to that are coming out later this year, like God of War Ragnarok. Super excited for that. I'm obsessed with Norse mythology and Norse history. Mm-hmm. My grandparents are actually immigrants from Sweden. So I'm very much in tune with my family ancestry, mm-hmm. and heritage and everything else. I'm actually learning Swedish as well right now. So there's a lot of that stuff where I'm just really in tune with a lot of that type of stuff. I have, like, you know, I have a Viking armoring on and all of that stuff. So I get into it. I get pretty into it. So I'm really excited for that game as well. But yeah, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 would be the other one too.
Call of Duty Modern. Can I just ask you a personal question? Probably best left. who cares? Viewers, follow along with me. What system would you recommend for me? The last system I bought and I still have and use, but I can only play old games on it, is the Xbox 360.
Oh,
if I were to buy some, it's kind of old, right? Okay, like, so
1,000 years ago.
Yeah, I go to the used game store sometimes, and they're like, "Oh no, we don't have that game on your system." I'm like, "Really? You don't make it for mine?" But so. So if I were to buy a new, invest in a new system, what would you say?
Man, you're really putting me on the spot here, because if I answer wrong, the viewers are super mad. They're going to be like, no, don't get that system.
This will be the most controversial thing you say.
And then, of course, you're going to have the PC Master Race people coming in. They're like, no, PC is the way to go.
I'm not doing PC, so we can already rule that out.
Okay, all right. Yeah, get those PC Master Race people out of here. They're irrelevant. So, personally, I'm a huge fan of Sony and PlayStation.
Okay.
System-wise, yes, that's a big part of it, but also just because of the games they put out. Like, God of War is like the best game that's ever been made, in my opinion. Freaking love that game God so much. So, and that's a Sony exclusive, a PlayStation exclusive, which, you know, you can get into the whole exclusive thing. I think that a lot of that stuff is pretty dumb, to be honest. Like, I'm definitely not one of these people that likes to gloat over the fact that my console has exclusive games where that other people can't play, because some of these stories are amazing and I would love to have everyone be able to play them.
Right.
So I definitely don't take pleasure in that, but the reality is that PlayStation does have a lot of exclusive games that are phenomenal. Like, the storytelling and everything else is just like so on point.
I love the storytelling, so okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. So God of War is an incredible game. It's a father-son story about kind of this grizzled old god killer warrior who is who kind of like flees to Scandinavia countries, and he then has a son, and it's kind of like a father-son story where he's kind of trying to teach his son how to be a man and everything else. And it's a great story. I love it. So the sequel to that is coming out in November, and I'm just so excited. Cool. I'll tell you what, there's these boss fights that are in God of War where you fight Valkyries, and oh my gosh, those are some of the toughest battles I've ever had to do in a game. Like, one of the Valkyries literally took me about 4 hours to beat, and I just kept on dying over and over.
Only 4 hours? You're much better than I am. Also, I play sporadically, so that'd probably take me 4 months. I'll keep coming back to it, like, yeah. Almost there.
it makes my wife so mad, because like she usually like will give something like 3 tries, and then if she doesn't beat it, she'll just stop.
She'll done.
Just give up. Yeah. So, you know, I probably was fighting this Valkyrie. I probably died like 100 times or something like that. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so it was just making her super mad. So
so we talked about Eric July Ripaverse doing, you know, independent comic books. Mm-hmm. You've got Epicverse doing independent film and series. Yeah. Is there someone doing independent gaming, like outside of the system?
There are independent game developers out there who are making some pretty awesome games. I don't think there's really anyone that's like in our circles per se, mm-hmm. but there are people out there that are making independent games that are doing very well. And that's really awesome to see, because there's a lot of problems in the whole gaming industry, not just like with woke stuff, but just kind of like with a lot of the other things. Like, it's just very corporatized. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have problems with your game, sometimes you can't get help from, you know, the people there, the game developers and stuff, or they, you know, put like a million different microtransactions in their games. And so there's just a lot of other problems that come with a lot of that, where game developers are kind of reinventing the wheel when it comes to a lot of that type of stuff. So it's really exciting to see that that's happening in the gaming space as well. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm just, I feel really lucky that I got to have you on Deprogrammed. You have to keep us up to date with what's happening with Epicverse. If people want to support you, mm-hmm. how can they do so, and where do they find you?
So with Epicverse, we are on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. So you can go follow us on any of those platforms. I will tell you right now, there is not any content that's available yet, but that is because we are in the process of making the content so that we can show you guys when that is available. So, so there's a lot of things that we are working on right now. Like, we literally have like I just finished this one film. We're about to jump right into another film, in a couple months here, actually. Or
that's so exciting. November.
And you know, these films that we're making right now are actually like, short films. So they're going to be short films. Each one is going to be its own story. They're all going to be very different from each other. And I can promise you, you guys are not ready for what you're about to see with these. They're just going to be so awesome. And And so we're working on those. We are working on a couple shows as well. We are currently working on our major, I call it the master project, which is going to be our major show, which honestly, it's good timing because when we release everything with this and with Epicverse and the pilot for this show, it's going to be right after the aftermath of Rings of Power, which will be just great timing because everyone already hates Rings of Power, rightfully so, because it's going to be a complete trash fest, and it makes me angry when I think about it. So so there's all of that type of nonsense, and so with this fantasy show that we're making, it's going to be very awesome, and I can't wait for you guys to be able to see what we have. So
cool. And your website is not done yet, is that right? You guys are working on it.
Yes, okay, it's in construction right now. So cool.
They can, you guys can find Josiah at Josiah Rises or at Epicverse and any of the platforms. And I just want to thank you so much for hanging out with us today, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Carrie. I appreciate it. It was awesome. Yeah.